You're a business owner.
Check.
You have business owner's insurance.
Check.
And 10 years ago, that went about enough. Today, small businesses are being targeted and taken down by hackers. Medical offices, consultants, CPAs, any business that's built success has everything to lose. You probably have cybersecurity installed on your computer.
Check.
But you probably don't have cyber insurance, coverage against loss and damage if your data is compromised. Cyber Policy covers that gap. CyberPolicy.com shops the leading cyber insurers to find you the right policy at the right price to avoid a catastrophe. Coverage against loss and damage if your data is compromised. Get a custom quote today in just 4 minutes. And for a limited time, use the promo code BLOGTALK to get Norton's small business protection for up to 5 devices free when you sign up for cyber insurance. Plan, prevent, insure. Visit cyberpolicy.com. That's cyberpolicy.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Friends of Kevin Radio Show. The Friends of Kevin Radio Show helps promote businesses, nonprofits, and artists. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email to kevin@friendsofkevin.com. To learn more about the Friends of Kevin Networking Group and to see a list of upcoming events, please visit our website at Friends of Kevin. So excited today, I have my friend John Brown with us, a professor. And we're going to talk a little bit about the academic life and his views on teaching. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Living the dream, brother. So, John, I want to start at the beginning. How did you get into teaching?
Well, I was a high school English teacher, and I started off at a small private school for children with learning disabilities called the Landmark School. It was a challenging job because I was an English teacher, and most of my students were dyslexic, which means their brains were not wired for decoding text. But the bosses there at that school trained us about how to teach that specific population, and they taught us to teach skills rather than content. So I eventually learned about how to teach those kids who had failed at reading in other places how to read, and not only sentence structure, basic sentences and text, but also poetry and Shakespeare, and that was pretty rewarding. I continued teaching English for another 18 years after that, and now what I do is I train future teachers at the University of Massachusetts in Lowell.
Interesting. So, John, I guess the big question I have is why would anyone want to be a teacher?
Yeah, it's an interest. It's a difficult job. It's a very difficult job, mostly because of the schedule. Teachers don't have enough time to prepare for all the classes they teach. Most teachers, school teachers, teach like 5 classes a day if they're middle or high school teachers. And if you're an elementary school teacher, you teach even more hours than that. There's also a general lack of trust on the part of policymakers and the general public for school teachers, which doesn't help either. But the reason I did it is because I loved, I got paid to help people, and I loved that. I would go to school every day, and I got paid to help people do things that I already knew how to do. I knew how to talk, I knew how to write, I knew how to read, and I knew how to help them with those things. And I get bored easily, so the reason why I liked doing it was because it was never boring. You know, kids are interesting to be around, so it keeps you young.
So is that what you think is the hardest part about teaching, John?
No, actually the hardest part is the utterly ridiculous level of bureaucracy that has come from what they call education reform. I started teaching in 1990, and I received a lifetime teacher certification back then because I had completed the courses that the state of Massachusetts required for me to know about English and to know about teaching English. The state took that lifetime licensure or that lifetime certification away from all the teachers in 1993. And now there are 3 levels of licensure. And even after achieving the highest level of licensure, a teacher must reapply every 5 years. This is just an example of some of that bureaucracy. This is not part of the teaching thing. This is outside of that. Teachers now need to provide evidence that their students are learning for their annual evaluations. We never had to do that before. Teachers have to take and pass a test now. We never had to do that before. Teachers have to prep their students for high-stakes tests. We never did that either. And if the teacher's students don't do well on those tests, the teachers are blamed for it. That never happened. Teachers have to be fingerprinted now even, and that's new. They have to get their master's degrees, which they didn't before, and even after they get their master's degrees, they're still required to take even more courses. All of these things are not about teaching. Some of them might contribute to better teaching, but they're not about teaching per se. The teaching part, most teachers really like. If the state requires that all the teachers to take a new course on how to teach English language learners, which they recently did, and the state requires them to take a very specific course in this, which they did, and the course is terrible, that has nothing to do with the job. I mean, that training is required for the job, but that's the worst part of it. It's not so much the fact that they the teachers have all these things to do that they didn't before, is that they are not given the time to do it. And many of these things also lack a certain amount of meaning for them. So the hardest thing about teaching is there are all these new requirements and bureaucracy for teachers. And as a result, some people aren't going into teaching, or they're not going into public school teaching anyway.
Interesting. So, John, what's going to be the role of technology in the future of teaching? Will it change things?
Oh, absolutely, and it already has, at least superficially. The best example of this is something that people call the flipped classroom. But in school, in most schools, teachers are going through the motions with this flipped classroom thing. This is where instead of giving a lecture in the class and students doing the work, you might call that homework at home, they watch a lecture at home that's a video, and then they do their homework in school where the teachers can help them with it. That's why they call it flipping. And that's an oversimplification of what I just described, but I think that defines it fairly well. Unfortunately, teachers don't have the freedom or the time to do flipping or any other work with technology in the most effective way. Technology allows students to learn faster, get information quicker, and study what interests them as opposed to just what everybody thinks they should know. If policymakers could get their heads out of the sand, they would see that children need the basic literacy skills and math skills that everybody needs in elementary school. But then when they reach like middle and high school, it's going to be more important that children learn how to judge what a credible source is or how credible a source is. Children need access to technology in order to do this, but most schools restrict access to technology. And teachers need training on how to do this, but most schools don't require any training for this, and they don't pay for it either. If this happens and the policymakers get rid – if this happens and the policymakers are able to support teachers in this way, give them more time for using technology, and spend less time on the high-stakes tests, there's enormous potential for our schools to change society in ways we can't even imagine now. People are inherently curious, and technology gives them the ability to look things up now in ways that we couldn't when I was a kid. It could really be amazing if we let teachers use it and we let students use the technology. But right now, technology is kind of it's still an afterthought because it's the things that are that technology brings aren't on these high stakes tests, and so the schools only focus on what they're going to be judged on.
So, John, one of the questions I always like to ask in, professors when I meet them is, do you feel that the students today are better educated than they were maybe 10, 20 years ago?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Other people ask me that question too. Most of the data that we have says that they are. The children are better educated now than they were 25 years ago. But that data only represents So, well, no, I said the data says yes. And so here's the nuance. Yes. That's a good question, right? It seems like I'm saying yes, but I'm saying the data says yes. But the data only represents specific skills that are being measured. And they're being measured by high-stakes tests like, for example, in the state of Massachusetts, the MCAS or MCAS. There are other tests, national tests, like the NAEP. And then there are some others even, but are less significant, like the SAT. So first off, the data that comes from these tests is not as reliable as most people think. So we don't have a clear picture, even of those skills, which are basic academic skills. And secondly, researchers and policymakers have not looked closely at the other skills, the ones that aren't on those tests, like creativity, teamwork, problem solving, etc. And those things aren't on those tests. It would probably be difficult to measure those things. I'm not sure how difficult. I don't make tests, but there hasn't been an effort to test children on those things. So it's really hard to tell whether or not children are better educated now than they were before. Because I've been in education that long, I would guess that they are, that they're at least more literate and they have basic reading and writing skills that when I started teaching that they might not have had before as a whole. However, that comes at a cost. Children are now, from what I can see, less independent, they're less innovative, and they're less curious. They're also more scared than they were, just generally anxious and scared than they were when I entered the profession. True intellectualism is curbed nowadays by two things. One is the tests, these high-stakes tests, and the other one is anti-intellectualism. And that anti-intellectualism is rooted in a misunderstanding in our society about pluralistic thinking among the general public. People are being misled. They think that being educated doesn't matter because there are no longer any facts. But they're wrong. Not about the death of facts as much as the rumored death of meaning. Even if there are no longer facts, and I'm not saying that that's the case, there would still be meaning, or else there would be no reason to get up in the morning, no reason to go on in life. And our search for meaning is an intellectual endeavor. Our search for meaning is injured, though, by these testing policies and by the cultural disease of anti-intellectualism. So I think that in some ways kids are better educated than they were 25 years ago, but that's been a trade-off. They also have some, you might call it disease, where they're afraid and they're less curious, for example.
So, John, we got about 2 minutes left. I want your advice to the new teacher who's going to be starting this fall. What's your advice to them?
Oh, that's easy because that's what I do. I'm a professor of education, so I train teachers, and I give them the same advice I gave my brother-in-law when he was just starting out about 2 decades ago. I told him this, and it's basically the Hippocratic Oath, which is what the oath that doctors take. Do no harm, or at least, I said to him, try not to harm them, because sometimes you do it by accident. And I stick by that one, 20 years later. I gave them that advice 20 years ago. But I add this part to it nowadays when I teach at UMass Lowell. I tell my students to try to build a community of learners in every class they teach. This will enhance the educational experience for them and for you if you're going to be a teacher. It will prevent distractions, antisocial behavior, and it will motivate students. It infuses their lives with meaning if they belong to a community of learners. Children who belong to a class where everybody is feels like a community, are more engaged, they're more curious, they feel safe to ask questions, and they feel safe enough to fail. And failure is sometimes required for learning.
Amen. So, John, how can people reach out to you to learn more? We've got about 30 seconds left.
Well, I work at UMass Lowell on South Campus, and my email address is john_brown@uml.edu. Thanks for having
me on the program. John, I really appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And as always, thanks for being my friend. Have a great day.
Very good.
John, thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Bye now.
You're a business owner.
Check.
You have business owner's insurance.
Check.
And 10 years ago, that went about enough. Today, small businesses are being targeted and taken down by hackers. Medical offices, consultants, CPAs, any business that's built success has everything to lose. You probably have cybersecurity installed on your computer.
Check.
But you probably don't have cyber insurance, coverage against loss and damage if your data is compromised. Cyber Policy covers that gap. Cyberpolicy.com shops the leading cyber insurers to find you the right policy at the right price to avoid a catastrophe. Coverage against loss and damage if your data is compromised. Get a custom quote today in just 4 minutes. And for a limited time, use the promo code BLOGTALK to get Norton's small business protection for up to 5 devices free when you sign up for cyber insurance. Plan, prevent, insure. Visit cyberpolicy.com. That's cyberpolicy.com.
NBC Boston responds, answering your consumer complaints.
Once you guys were involved, they were very helpful.
No one wants to feel ripped off.
What they were doing was wrong. It was just wrong.
So if you can't get answers,
I felt like I was strung along.
NBC Boston's Leslie Gatos will.
Once I sent my email into NBC, contacted right away.
It's your money, and NBC Boston responds wants to help you get it back.
NBC Boston definitely helped me.
Contact us at NBC Boston responds.